Thank you for tuning in to Aster Investment Management's podcast series. This week, our Chief Investment Officer, John Eckstein, and Senior Managing Director, Mac O'Brien, discuss the current economic outlook in the era of COVID-19. Thank you both for joining us today.
Hello, and welcome back to another edition of Aster's Economic Week in Review. Like the past 3 or 4 weeks, we have John Eckstein with us, the CIO of Aster. John, what's happening?
Hey, Mac, how's it going?
It's going great. Sabila, again, thank you for the introduction. Hey, John, let's start off like we did last week. We just kind of give a big picture summary of where we're at in the economy, any big changes. Obviously, we'll talk about jobless claims to start off in a couple seconds here, but give me your 2 cents and your overall feeling on what's happening in the economy.
Yeah, I'd say overall more of the same, where the data that we've gotten is looking extremely grim for March or April, depending on when we're looking at it. And like, there's no real change to that. You know, maybe you can see signs of things bottoming a little bit, but in the sense of like not continuing to decelerate to the downside. But overall, a sort of a grim picture.
Yeah. So, you know, we don't really talk about the direction of the stock market too much in this podcast, but we both stare at it all day, every day. So let's just go there real quick. The market has seemed to have found some sort of tailwind, right? Where it's been trading higher and it almost has this optimistic type of feel to it, at least over the course of the past week or so. I think I read that it was one of the better months that the markets had since some long period of time. Where's the disconnect? I mean, is it because we're only looking at, well, obviously it's a stimulus package and the money that's being thrown out the windows, but where is the disconnect between how grim the economic data is and where the market's trading?
Yeah, I mean, I think the other piece is that the sort of Wall Street as a whole is expecting a much stronger 2021, right? And the market's already written off 2020 and is talking about 2021. And we'll see if we make through, stay at these levels through the end of earnings season as the companies really report what's going on. But I think there's a few things. One is that the stock market's looking through to 2021, but the stock market isn't the only market, too. The oil market, which we'll talk about probably today, because we've had some questions on oil, and the bond market are telling you very different things about the economy than the stock market is, right? The oil is at its lows. I mean, not at its negative, but substantially at it, as low as it ever gets. And the U.S. 10-year yield is extremely low, too. And both those are not saying good things about economic activity. And also, you know, the VIX, the fear gauge, is still extremely, extremely elevated, especially when you compare it to the current volatility, actual realized volatility. Stock market isn't the only market. Commodities are telling you a grim picture. They're down, you know, 60% to 30% on the year. And the bond market is telling you the same thing. And so the stock market is sort of the odd man out here. And we will see who's right.
Interesting. Yeah, absolutely. So with that being said, we talked about some grim data. Let's jump over to where we always start, which is jobless claims. Another 4.2-ish or 4.4 million jobs lost last week.
So 4.4 million filings for unemployment, right? So hopefully those jobs aren't all lost. It's hard to say.
What do you mean by that?
A fair number of the jobs have been marked as furloughed opposed to let go, right?
I mean, for the time being, these people are out of work.
The people are not getting paid, right? And so they're getting unemployment insurance. Mm-hmm. But if there's truly, to step back and take the bigger picture, you know, we've been doing sort of at the beginning, the uncertainty now is sort of how long and how bad this will be, right? The unemployment rate right now implied by these jobless claims is, you know, mid-teens, 15%, something like that, much worse than the Great Recession, getting towards like depression levels. What's going to separate us from a depression is that people still have a connection to their jobs. And so if you really thought 20% of the country was out of work, and just like flat out of the work, the companies went out of business, they're fired and they have no road back, then that's big, big, big trouble, right? So we're hoping that all these subsidies that we're giving companies to keep people attached to the workforce is going to make the bounce back better. So
that all really depends on essentially the companies that can get the stimulus loan slash grant and to kind of tie them over to the economy reopening.
It depends on a bunch of things. One of them is, for most of these companies, yes, getting some assistance over the hump. When companies are allowed to reopen, they in fact do reopen.
Yeah. So what do you
when people are allowed to go to the store, they do, right? So your store, if Illinois opened up today, like, would you go to a movie theater?
No, of course not.
Right. So the movie theaters are out no matter what.
Right.
Right. You wouldn't go to a football game. You wouldn't go to a concert. Would you let your kids go to school if they're allowed to? So, you know,
how about in Georgia? Would you go get a tattoo, get your nails done, and go to a bowling alley in Georgia tomorrow?
Yeah, so I think that's actually interesting, right? In Georgia, there's an interesting example, right? So some speculation that Georgia basically wants to not pay unemployment insurance. If the government is saying you have to keep your tattoo parlor closed, then they have to pay the unemployment insurance. But if they say, oh, you can open up if you want to, then it's your fault, right? And so, you know, these states are being stretched extremely, you know, they're paying 10 times, 20 times what they thought their possible maximum would be in claims in unemployment insurance. And so, you know, states are going to start trying not to pay that.
Very interesting. I did not think of that.
So the claims number, we wandered away a little bit from talking about the exact data which came out. So the claims number was another bad number, you know, 4.4.
But less bad than it was last week, which is a small positive.
Yeah, and it was basically right on expectations too. And I think you can see that around how the stock market was trading around it. Yeah, basically right on like what people thought it was going to be. The continuing claims number, the number of people who have, you know, are still getting unemployment insurance is 16 million, which is an awful lot. Yeah, so there's no sort of break on the claim side so far. And the early expectations right now for next week are another 3.5 million. I'm guessing that's just sort of people extrapolating from recent weeks. Like over the, sometimes we might get more information from states or, you know, have a better way to estimate that as the week goes on. But right now, economists are expecting another 3.5 million next week.
I mean, so I've talked about this past several weeks, but to me, and I trust the economic data that's coming out and the surveys and all the official data more than I do with anecdotal stories. But when I talk to people that are business owners in the Chicagoland area, I mean, the stories I'm getting, it's you know, like I have one close friend who owns a concrete company, and he says that he's going to probably have to file bankruptcy, right? He's like, I'm not getting paid on my receivables. I still owe my dues and I'm not getting any relief. He has not been able to get money from the banks yet, even though he completely qualifies. And some of the workers that he needs to come back to do the current jobs won't come back because they're making too much in unemployment. And they won't come back until he's guaranteeing them 70 hours with 30 hours of overtime, because until that happens, they'd rather sit at home. So at what point, when you're doing your research and your reading, John, when you look at the effects or the, you know, the money that's getting distributed, we know there's a lot being distributed. Are there negative effects to what's happening with the amount of unemployment people are receiving? And is the stimulus getting to the right places?
Is the stimulus getting to the right places? So, you know, you do need to just shovel money out the window, right? That's what we need to do now. And the money gets to a little bit of the wrong place. You can imagine two errors, like we don't spend enough money and we spend too much money, right? We definitely need to err on the side of spending too much money right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, the benefits, a lot of places are in fact greater than the wages, and that's going to go on for a couple of months. Usually you expect unemployment benefits to cover, it varies state by state. Every state has their own system.
So John, you know, we saw the jobless claims, you know, be less bad, right? In terms of it was less people filing for unemployment this past week than it was the week before. When we look at the underemployed, like we've talked about in the past, and I was just thinking over the course of the past week, and I was thinking about like luxury goods, right? Luxury goods, high-end homes, luxury cars, country clubs, like that part of the economy where you think about the effect of the higher income earners, you know, bonuses probably being pared back significantly. Anyone who's in, we talked about last week, a sales type of role that sells goods and gets paid a commission, their income is being reduced drastically. I mean, what is the outlook for that upper end of the economy, people who kind of lived up to their means over the past 3 or 4 or 5 years, and they bought that bigger home or they bought that nicer car, they joined that country club? I mean, have there been any studies or any type of commentary that you've read that talks about the expectations on that higher end of the economy?
I haven't seen anything specifically about that. I mean, I think in general, the consumer's balance sheet is in a good place, a much, much better place than it was in the 07 recession. People paid down a lot of debt after the global financial crisis. Interest rates are much lower now. So put those together and the consumer's balance sheet is much better. And you think about it in terms of like people's daily or monthly interest bill.
Yeah. And they didn't have the wealth destruction of their home being cut in half, their home value, like they did during the housing / financial crisis.
As of now, they have not had their home. Right. And so
perfect segue, John. Let's go to...
But I mean, so if you think about home, if you think about people's wealth, a lot of people in our business think about the stock market as people's wealth, right? But like, that's actually not true. You know, most people have very, very few financial assets. And so that's really focusing on the upper end of the economy. And I think your point about the luxury goods, like there are people with more flexibility. If you're like making $300,000 a year and you're making $200,000 this year, but you're thinking you're going to be back to $300,000 next year, you may be able to smooth that income a little bit. It's much easier for someone with a house and, you know, a six-figure income to do that than somebody who's making $30,000 a year, right? Who doesn't have any savings.
Right.
So the wealth destruction in the stock market, which has been modest, all things considered, I don't expect that to have huge multiplier effects.
Okay, interesting. So I was going to segue in from into existing home sales. For the data geeks out there, the consensus was around 5.3, 5.4 million that I'm looking at my screen, John. I don't know what you have for the consensus. And the preliminary number came in at 5.27. So pretty much in line with expectations for existing home sales. But, you know, so it's down slightly sales, but the actual median sales price rose a little bit for year over year, or up around 8%. You see that changing from your comment a couple seconds ago.
I would think so, yeah. I would see prices declining. So this is something, this market's closed. There's nobody buying and selling homes right now. And so, you know, presumably the people who will be selling, you expect home prices to go down in a recession. So it could be the case that people who sell are forced to sell for some reason. They're moving or they're sick or whatever.
Yeah, forced.
Like home sales are still sort of, so the March home sales number, presumably that was all sort of in train. I don't know if you've ever sold a home, but it's not like a one-day decision, right? It takes a while. You get the closings scheduled and the lawyer and stuff like that. Like these things are planned a month in advance. So that was presumably just stuff that was canceled. I think April will probably be much worse, right, in terms of home sales.
No, not to go back on a train of thought that I had a couple seconds ago, but lower, mid to higher end homes. I guess my question is, in the consumer, with the consumer's confidence being obviously reduced, is this going to have like a lasting psychological effect on the consumer where they say, okay, well, you know, my income was reduced for a year or maybe 18 months, and therefore I'm not going to stretch myself to get up to this level of a home because I always want to make sure I have a little bit of breathing room. I mean, do you see the higher end of the homes being under more pressure than the medium or lower end?
I think, again, a lot of it's going to depend on how long this goes on, right? There's a lot of evidence about people who grew up in the Depression had different patterns of consumption than people who didn't, than people the generation before or after. And so if this is a long thing, then sure, it could have permanent effects.
So, John, let's move over to the PMI composite flash that came out. You know, another big reduction, falling prices, growing pessimism. You know, we probably will briefly touch upon durable goods, but durable goods is down. With PMI composite flash or the PMI reports, what are your biggest takeaways from those?
Yeah, so I mean, this is not a super surprise. This is our early April numbers, right? So this the way this number works is that it was released, we're recording this on the 24th, it was released on the 23rd, and that's data through like the 21st or the 22nd. You know, both services and manufacturing is very weak. These numbers are actually not as weak as they were for Europe. These are a scale of 0 to 100, with 50 being sort of neutral. You've never seen any readings like of 100 or 0, but the numbers that came out in like France were like 17, right? Then the Eurozone was 17.
Like 40 is really bad, to put that in perspective to our listeners.
40 is really bad. Today's numbers are 27. They're not as bad as they were in Europe, I think, reflecting the fact that the European shutdown was much more severe than ours. I would expect these numbers to continue. Like what we saw in China is that the first month after the slowdown, like those numbers came up to 50, which doesn't really mean things are getting better. That means like they went down and then they sort of stayed down. We'll have to interpret these numbers carefully next month. But that's a good number because it's an April number.
John, there's not a data point that like an economic report that was released over the course of the past week, but we have to talk about energy and oil. You know, yeah. It's been crazy in terms of the volatility and what's happening. We touched upon it briefly last week, but what developments, I mean, what comments do you have this week on it?
So, I mean, what was happening in the oil market this week, so we saw negative oil prices in the futures market. And so that's a familiar phenomenon. If you've ever had to clean out your parents' house and call 1-800-GOT-JUNK, right? So you have this stuff that's worth something, but you have to pay someone to take it away. So that's what that was going on in the oil market, where there was no storage left in Cushing, Oklahoma, where you have to deliver or receive delivery for the WTI futures. And so with no storage, like people weren't willing to pay for it. And so the price got negative for a day or two. It stopped doing that. Oil demand is extremely, extremely low now. It's not free to just leave the oil in the ground. Right, you'd think that, oh, we'll just stop pumping it. We don't need to worry about it, right?
It actually costs more to shut down a rig, or it stops more to pause or even reduce production than it does to...
It can, yes.
Yeah, right.
It can, yes. I think especially in the fracking wells. There actually have been, you know, extended periods of time when certain very low quality oils have been negative, the stuff that they make asphalt out of. Basically, you have to pay someone to take it away from you. My overall takeaway is that global oil demand is much, much lower than people had expected, right? And so we make about 100 million barrels of oil a day. We make and consume 80 million barrels a day. There could be continued sort of odd things happening with delivery, and I don't think we should spend too much time thinking about that. You know, it's just another symptom of global economic weakness.
Severe, right? I mean, severe weakness.
Severe. And also, so it just acts a little bit funny in the oil market, because a 20% drop in demand, you know, in this case led to a 100% drop in price, right? Just because for a particular product.
Well, for a particular month too, right? I mean...
For that particular month.
Open and no one's driving in the whole entire world. I mean, it's not like there's zero demand for it in the summer. It's just in the month of May, no one wanted to buy the barrels, right?
Right. And you also, you know, you could also look at, even with the May number, if you look at, there's separate futures markets for gasoline and heating oil, and those had declined, but they hadn't, you know, gone negative. They hadn't gone as ridiculous as the crude oil price was. So that shows you is mainly that particular negative prices were a speculative excess on top of a real phenomena.
Right.
And also you can see the speculative excess, like Robinhood, you know, the Robinhood, the little retail brokerage firm.
Yep.
Their clients like bought so much of USO, which is the ETF, which is long oil, and they bought it. As it was going down, they just bought more and more and more, and they all got wiped out. It was, use a professional to trade your alternatives, I think is my lesson.
That's pretty funny. All right, excellent, John. Thanks for the comments on the oil. Let's see where we want to go. We want to go sentiment?
Yep. So Michigan came out with their final numbers, which were pretty close to their preliminary numbers. You know, extremely weak. Other higher frequency sentiment readings are the same. There's kind of not a lot of good news that we're seeing right now.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that I can say that might be positive is that it's like jobless claims, that it's not, the sentiment numbers aren't as bad as they were, right? So the drop is not as severe as the previous drop. Which could point to, you know, consumers thinking that things might get a little bit better here in the near term. I personally have that sentiment. I think things feel off. I feel like the economy's being, Chicago's now closed through May. or Illinois for that matter. I don't feel optimistic about the summer or the fall, to be honest. But, you know, there is a high, if you're looking at Justice Report, I guess there is some positive that it's less bad than it has been.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, things could get worse. And so hopefully we're finding a bottom, I think, would be the thing that we're thinking about in the economic data.
Mm-hmm. Hey, John, let's move over to durable goods, right? So durable goods are the stuff essentially that makes stuff. So when durable good orders go down, it's kind of an indication that, you know, future growth is stifled, because if you're not buying stuff that builds stuff, then what's really going to happen with GDP? So a lot of this is airlines. With durable goods coming in at a negative 14.4%, which is a massive drop, you know, month over month, obviously.
Right. So we used to call this doubtable goods, because it's a very erratic number. So durable goods are sort of divided into two categories: durable goods overall, and then they break out the capital goods, which, as you're saying, is goods that we use to make other goods. But then the durable goods would include things that are expected to last a while. So it includes cars, notably, right? Durable goods minus 14, but durable goods ex transportation minus only 2, or 0.2%.
Right.
So, I mean, I think that's reflecting the, you know, the lack of sales in the auto industry right now.
Yep.
In particular. And then, yeah, you brought up aircraft, and there's been a bunch of more bad news for Boeing. And so, like, I'm not sure exactly what's going to happen in the airline production sector. Like, I think that we're going to say politically it's not acceptable not to have a domestic U.S. airline producer. But Boeing had its own problems before everybody was in lockdown. And
yeah, it was already beat up and punched several times, right?
Yeah. And so, you know, they got another big cancellation for the 737 MAX. And how they come back, I think, is going to be tricky. I think they're going to end up being heavily subsidized, maybe bought by the government or something like that, just because we want to have an airline producer.
Right. Okay.
You know, for people, if you listen to the earnings calls for, you know, Delta or Southwest or whatever, like, those are very, very grim. Airline miles are down 80%, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that is going to come back slowly when things reopen. I was talking to our colleague Nick, who's got a bachelor party for his brother in July in Miami. He kind of doesn't want to go, right?
I mean, I can't imagine that anyone's going to be doing elective travel like that in groups of more than 10 people before. It's just taboo, right? I mean, I don't see any of that happening. It's almost like mindsets like that bring me back to mindsets of a month and a half ago, when it's like, well, should we close the office? And it's like, of course everyone's going to close their office, right? Like, I highly doubt that there'll be recreational travel occurring, only because, I mean, will there be places for them to go? I mean, are the restaurants going to be open? Are the clubs going to be open? I mean, can you right. go sit by a pool? Like, no, I don't think that's going to be happening.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. I mean, I think stuff outside, it seems like the early evidence is that stuff outside is a lot safer than anything else. And so, like, maybe we, you know, with the summer, we may be able to move a lot of social stuff outside on sunny days. We'll see. That doesn't sound like South Beach, right?
Yeah. Right. You can put a tent in your backyard with a hose and a sprinkler, or you can go to South Beach. I get it. But at the same time, you know, I turned 40 coming here very soon. I have a lot of buddies in the same. There's been a bunch of trips planned this summer, and it's not going to happen no matter which way you look at it. So yeah, we'll see how the airlines can hang on. It'll be interesting. I'll see if the Boeing comment of becoming government owned would be obviously very interesting.
Yep.
All right, John. So we'll be wrapping up here in a second. That's the PMI composite durable goods, consumer sentiment, jobless claims, existing home sales. So we've covered the major data reports for this week. We've talked in the past about higher frequency data and reports that you monitor. Is there anything that's come out this week that has hit your radar that you want to discuss before we hop off?
No, it's the it's sort of the same story we've been telling. You know, whether you're looking at other measurements of retail sales or other measurements of consumer sentiment or production, like, it's all bad, 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 and no real clear sign of bottoming or turning around yet. And I don't think that's a surprise, right? Like, this is a situation where you and I know it's happening more than the numbers, right? Where the country's locked down. I think next month will be a lot more interesting, you know, if places start to open up and we might start to see some sort of green shoot somewhere.
Okay. You know, John, the with the economy opening back up, I'm so curious as to how many people are actually going to go out. I mean, everyone's learned how to online shop. I don't think you're going to catch me in a restaurant. I'd rather order out and sit on my deck. With weather being warmer, I mean, why would you go sit in a restaurant unless you've got the antibodies and you're immune? Why would you go sit in a restaurant and not just get the takeout or grill, right? I don't know. We'll see how behavior changes over the next month and a half. It'll be very interesting.
Yeah, there'd be a couple things like the next month and a half, and then, you know, the longer period too, you know, over the summer as people get lockdown fatigue. You know, I think people are actually taking lockdown more seriously maybe than some people thought they would.
Mm-hmm.
Was that still going to be the case 3 months from now? We'll see.
Yep. So let's talk about what's coming up next week. We have, you know, on my radar, I have jobless claims, again, of course, GDP, PMI manufacturing, and ISM manufacturing. What's on your radar, or do you have any comments or concerns with those data points?
Yep. Well, we also have the Fed meeting next week, which we'll be looking at. We won't be that I'm not super interested in the GDP numbers. We do have another confidence survey, the conference board, and then, yeah, the ISM, the final of the market PMI, which we talked about, and then, you know, the initial for the ISM manufacturing next week too.
Great. Well, stay tuned, folks. We'll have another crazy / interesting week of data next week, and we will be recording again on Friday the 1st. John, thanks again. Listeners, please don't forget to subscribe and give us a 5-star rating. Next week, we'll have another very interesting, you know, set of data, so stay tuned. John, have a great weekend.
Thanks, Mac. I'll talk to you soon.
To learn more about Aster Investment Management's research and strategies, please visit us on the web at www.asterim.com or stay up to date by following us on LinkedIn, Twitter, and our app is also available on the App Store and Google Play. Thank you. Aster Investment Management, LLC, is a SEC-registered investment advisor. All information contained herein is for informational purposes only. This is not a solicitation to offer investment advice or services in any state where to do so would be unlawful. Analysis and research are provided for informational purposes only, not for trading or investing purposes. All opinions expressed are as of the date of publication and subject to change. They are not intended as investment recommendations.